Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community In Depth, and we are going in depth today with Father Mike Tix. He's the Vicar General of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. He's also pastor of the tri-parishes of St. John's, St. Matthias, and St. Mary's, and we are thrilled to chat it up with him today about quite a few things, but mostly about the upcoming Eucharistic pilgrimage that the public is invited to. Father Mike, great to see you. How have you been?
I've been good. Good to see you.
Well, I know you're very, very busy. So for people that are listening and might not know what the term Vicar General of the Archdiocese means, might you tell us, please?
Sure. So Vicar General is a canonical term that works and supports the efforts of the Archbishop. Sometimes he can't be every place, so sometimes he needs someone to stand in. And so that's the bigger part of things. So sometimes become his voice in some matters that are appropriately designated for me.
And before we went on the air, we were talking about, obviously, a lot of faiths are, there's a shortage of personnel, and Catholic priests are no exception. However, great news, because this year there is going to be quite a few that are being ordained in a larger number than usual.
Yes, we're very blessed this year that we'll have 13 ordinations this year, 13 men ordained as priests. We just had a big ordination group of new permanent deacons as well. So we've been very, very blessed with that. And there certainly is need for that in serving in our parishes and our schools, hospitals, other kinds of institutions. It's great to be able to have a good number this year, and they won't be ready to go solo in parishes yet, but this is the part of that training, and they become our future pastors.
So when you mentioned a permanent deacon, for people that don't understand what that is, might you tell us, please? Because there are, is it transitional deacons then too? Okay.
Sure. Transitional deacons and permanent deacons. Transitional deacons is one step along the way to being ordained as a priest.
Can I tell you, though, it's very confusing for people. When you see a transitional deacon, you do get to wear a collar, and it's kind of confusing.
It does become confusing. That's not the first time that topic's come up at all. Usually, to be able to help, the deacons are dressed in gray, but that's not that every place either. But sometimes there does become some confusion, and a lot of the times the deacons have to do some... No, I'm a deacon, not a priest, just to kind of put it in the right context. But they do a great service. They're ordained to a ministry of service that gets expressed in a lot of ways. Most of them are married with families, and typically after the kids are a little older, they'll go and discern this vocation of service, which has got a history in the life of the church, but was brought back as one of the outgrowths of the Second Vatican Council. And they're doing lots of good things in lots of places.
We know Deacon Rod Walker, and that's kind of his path, wasn't it? His kids are out of the house, and he had been discerning. And that's a long process, though, isn't it?
It is a long process. I mean, it's the discernment process first that leads to the application, and then there's some background stuff before you're accepted into the program. And then, you know, it's a full program of some years.
Theology, and I would assume many things like that.
Yep.
Well, that's good. And again, that is a blessing that so many people are choosing to go into the priesthood. That's a beautiful thing. So tell us an overview, please, of the three parishes that you serve.
Life is good in the three parishes. Each of the three has got something going on, whether in buildings or projects or something or another. At St. John's School, we're in the middle of a transition. School year is going great. It's quickly winding down.
It's crazy.
Way too fast. But we're in the transition to a new principal. Paul Deltz has served us very well over the last 4 years. And we're very excited about Pam McSweeney, who's coming in as our new principal.
I like
first
her
of
name.
July. Very Irish. I knew you would.
You need some Irish blood out there and all that.
The only thing is that she's a Packers fan, but we're working on her.
Well, that is awesome to hear. And the three parishes, of course, are still standalone. How do you describe it?
No, they're still three independent parishes. Work together on lots of things. Mm-hmm. You know, the line that I like to use is stronger together. and we do that in faith formation. We do that in outreach. We even do that in working together in support of school.
And St. Matthias was your parish growing up as a kid?
It was.
Pretty cool. Was Marlee Rother the organist when you were a kid?
She took over after the sisters left.
Okay.
There was always one of the sisters that I can remember,
yeah.
School Sisters of Notre Dame, when they were at school.
Yep.
Typically one of them always did music. And then after the sisters left, then at one point in time, Marlee stepped in and did it for years.
Yes, and we just lost her, of course. What a character. She used to come in here once a year and dance and just do all sorts of crazy
probably
things.
With her accordion.
Exactly. And I always had to have the 7-second button ready because you never knew what was going to come out of her mouth. Loved her, yeah. So let's talk about, please, the Eucharistic pilgrimage that's coming up. This is a very big deal, and it's really a coup for the three parishes mm-hmm. to be involved in something like this. Can you give people that perhaps aren't Catholic a little bit of a background about this, please?
Sure. So part of it comes out of, it's an initiative of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. So all the bishops in the United States are involved in this Eucharistic revival. And it comes out of, in some ways, the whole experience of COVID and everybody being in lockdown and watching Mass on TV and getting people to come back into churches to be able to refresh what's the meaning of Eucharist and Mass for us as Catholics, which is the heart and soul of who we are. We talk about the Eucharist as the summit and source of the church's life, and we were away from that in COVID, and so a part of the revival was to get people plugged back in, back to Mass on the one hand, as well as to renew what we talk about is our belief in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, bread and wine that become for us the real body and blood of Jesus.
And so this revival or renewal is something that has been how long in the making?
It's probably been, it might be as much as 5 years in the making.
Okay.
It's a part of a 3-year plan. The first year was more of a diocesan effort, a parish effort, and then a diocesan effort. And now this third year is really focusing on the Eucharistic Congress that'll happen in July in Indianapolis, the first in the United States in 83 years. And if I remember right, I think the last, ironically, the last one was in the mid-40s, 1943, in St. Paul at the fairgrounds.
So what is that going to be like?
I think it's going to be people coming from all over and just reflecting in this Congress, this gathering, about...
Do you have to be elected to go to this?
Nope. Okay. It's open to anyone and everyone. You need tickets for it just to be able to manage crowd as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's going to be is different prayer gatherings, different reflections, educational things around Eucharist and what that calls us to in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
In a practical kind of way, how do you put faith into action? Our belief in the Eucharist is the real presence of Jesus. And what does that call us to? What does our communion call us to?
How would you answer that question?
Well, I think that in some ways, what it calls us to is to be able to go out and live what we believe. And part of that is something as simple as golden rule, treat others the way that I want to be treated, being a good neighbor to someone, being helpful in those kinds of ways. Those are all just the practical applications that sometimes I don't think we even give a second thought to just because it's ingrained in us.
Yes. So when you talk about the real presence in the Eucharist,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people that are listening might not know what that means. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that, please?
Sure.
And that is what really makes the Catholic faith separate and to me, very special.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we believe what happens at Mass is that, you know, we take bread and wine, and then under the power of the Holy Spirit, we believe that that bread and wine are changed into the body and blood of Jesus. Going back to Jesus' own words, take this and eat, take this and drink, this is my body, this is my blood. We believe that happens in a very real way. Still looks like bread, still tastes like bread, still looks like wine, still tastes like wine. But we believe that there's something fundamentally different with that, that there's a change that happens in that. And it's out of that that we do things as Catholics, for example, like after Mass, we reserve it in a tabernacle to both take that to those who are sick, but also for prayer and adoration, which is a part of what leads into the Eucharistic processions.
So if you just actually, before we went on the air, were telling me about First Holy Communion for some of the kids in the tri-parishes. I bet that was so special. And how do you impart really everything to them that they need to know? Or is that why our faith is a continual, we keep learning? Because at that age, probably they just want to be part of the church in some regard, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just had First Communion for 26 this past weekend. And First Communions are always fun occasions. I love First Communions just because of the smiles, the energy, the joy that's there. And the kids get the concept. You're right, we never fully grasp that. That's why we talk about lifelong learning. We're never completely done in learning and growing. And for the sake of the kids, most of them in second grade, not all, some might be older than that depending on their faith journeys, but they're able to recognize that sense in a very basic way. The bread and the wine are become something different. May not be able to explain it, but they know something's there. And if they can understand that sense that something's there, then they're ready to be able to receive that in a journey that continues again over a lifetime of learning, growing to what God calls us to be in our lives.
And what does the Eucharist mean to you?
I mean, the Eucharist is the food, again, the food for the journey of life. You know, like anything, we need to be able to eat.
The superfood.
The superfood. We need to be able to feed our souls. And the Eucharist is that for us. It becomes that food for the journey of life that strengthens us, that supports us, that becomes our nourishment along the way. And in doing that, receiving that nourishment, it's also not alone, but it's with a community of people around that we do that together. Together we're nourished with that Eucharist to become, in some sense, not ourselves, but at least an instrument of what we believe for one another and for our world.
And I would assume you saw a lot of little cuties this weekend or this last weekend that were just in awe. And that is how we should approach the Eucharist, isn't it?
That's where First Communions are so nice, especially in a parish setting, because they have that ability to renew that sense in everybody that's there.
That is something that we're going to be renewed again at this Eucharistic pilgrimage. Can you please explain what's going to happen or what we could expect? And I know that you are giving a plea out for everybody to attend this.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the invitation is to anyone and everyone. What's happening as a part of the revival is leading up to the Congress in Indianapolis, they're having four different Eucharistic processions, literally four corners of the country that all converge on Indianapolis. For the northern route, the Marian route, that'll come through here, it's going to start at Lake Itasca, the headwaters of the Mississippi, appropriately enough. And it's going to carry it through the Twin Cities area.
And what does that look like when you say carry it through?
Literally, it's going to be a pilgrimage from starting in Lake Itasca that's going to end up in Indianapolis.
People are going to walk it?
There's going to be some pilgrims, designated pilgrims along the way that are going to go all the way. Some people are going to plug in at different times. There's going to be a good amount of walking. There's also going to be some driving parts of it as well. But there'll be some clear walking where others are invited to be able to join in those processions.
And what does that mean, do you think, if you are part of this pilgrimage? Where should your heart be if you want to do that?
First of all, I mean, anybody's invited to it. But I think what the calling of it is that life itself is a journey. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a reminder of that sense of journey and the presence of God with us in that journey of life. And captured in the Eucharist that leads us in that journey, which will be a part of these processions.
Mm, it sounds so beautiful. So it's going to start at the headwaters. Does it follow the Mississippi then? Is that what you're saying?
Not completely.
Okay.
It's going to start at the headwaters. You know, it's going to go through the northern suburbs.
Does it stop at churches periodically then?
Yep. It's going to stop at, I think it's 30 different churches in our archdiocese.
Nice.
So the idea is to have a whole variety and diversity of what those are going to be. What's going to get a lot of attention is that actually on Memorial Day, the Blessed Sacrament will go, I think it's from the Basilica to St. Paul Seminary. And then there'll be a big procession down Summit Avenue from St. Paul Seminary, St. Thomas area, down Summit Avenue to the Cathedral. That's going to draw a lot of lot of focus and expecting a good number of people to be there. Then later that week, that's when it comes to WAS. So on May 30th, it starts out in Farmington at St. Michael's, and then the group will drive from Farmington to St. Matthias in Hampton, get there about 10:30 is the plan, and then we'll do a short procession, so the procession will reassemble kind of from the driving stage. We'll reassemble at St. Matthias, and then we'll do a procession remembering our history. It'll take a path through the cemetery and then into the front doors of the church, where the Blessed Sacrament will be there for a period of time. Rosary will happen at that point, be led by someone, and then after lunch, it'll go from the church in Hampton along 47, County Road 47, through Hampton, across the 52 bridge, and there it's going to disassemble. And it'll drive from there to Vermilion, the old KC Hall, reassemble there, and then be processed from there into Vermilion and St. John's. The reason was, we had to tighten that up a little bit, the reason was to give the kids in school an opportunity to be a part of this historic event.
That's awesome. So that will be all on May 30th?
Yeah, that's all May 30th, and it'll conclude on the 30th. At 7 o'clock that evening, there'll be a holy hour. Bishop Eisen is going to be the celebrant for that holy hour, and he'll probably speak. One of the pilgrims will probably speak, but it'll be an hour of prayer and reflection that'll be there with a reception to follow. That's the 30th. On the 31st, everything will pick up at 7:30 for Mass at St. Mary's in New Trier. After Mass, there'll be a procession again through the cemetery and around town before preparing the group from New Trier will then go to Zumbrota and that last leg in our archdiocese, Zumbrota, Pine Island, and then into the Diocese of Winona, Rochester. Again, kind of progressing on its way to Indianapolis.
Wow. And again, that Indianapolis date is when?
July 19th through the 21st,
wow.
I think.
This is very special.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, well, we appreciate you telling us about it, and we appreciate the invitation. If people want to learn more, can they go to your bulletin or something?
We'll have something in the bulletin. The other thing is, to be able to see the whole big picture, go to the Archdiocesan website, archspm.org, and they'll have all the information as well.
Thank you so much. This is just great information. We hope that the weather's good, and we hope that it's really, it moves a lot of people to come out. We appreciate your time today, Father Mike. Father Mike Tix is the Vicar General of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. He's also the pastor of the tri-parishes of St. John's, St. Matthias, and St. Mary's. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7, KDWA in Hastings.
Lord, I come. I confess, bowing here, I find my rest. Without you, I fall apart. You're the one that guides my heart. Lord, I need.